Welcome to the My Family Coach podcast. I'm Claire, and each week you'll find me interviewing a guest expert to find out more about the tricky world of child behaviour, all in handy 15-minute-ish bite-sized chunks. At the end of each episode, we'll send you away with three practical tips. It's perfect for parents, carers, and professionals working with children. And if this episode leaves you wanting more, you can watch, listen, and read our wide range of free resources on the My Family Coach website. I'm joined today by Ian Timbrell. Ian has been a teacher for 15 years and a deputy head teacher for 5 years, in which time he's worked as an advisor and supported schools across South Wales. Ian recently set up an education consultancy where he will share his passion for equality and support schools with relationship sex education, diversity and LGBTQ plus equality. And today, Ian and I are talking about what to do if my child is questioning their sexuality. Enjoy the episode. Hi, Ian. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. Thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really well. It's really good to have you on the podcast today. We haven't had a topic about what we're talking about today, which is what to do if your child is questioning their sexuality. And I think, I mean, in 15 minutes, we're probably only going to be scratching the surface, perhaps. But yeah. I guess, yeah, the idea is we'll get across some really helpful information, really, for parents and carers. But as we always do on the podcast, could you start off by recommending a book on the topic?
Yeah, of course. And I think this is where, as parents, I'm a parent myself, we need to do research on this. It's such a pertinent issue at the moment. And children are more comfortable than ever with their sexuality. Mm. And I think that is a really good thing. And I'll talk about my personal perspective on that in a bit. But the book I'm going to recommend is called Queer Up by Alexis Court, and is a guide to all things really LGBTQ plus, from what the terminology means. It has sections from a perspective of a young person who wants to come out, but it also has sections for parents and carers as well. If they're at the other end, if they're sort of worrying about their child, if they're wondering about their sexuality, or what to do when their child does come out. And it is an incredibly easy to read book that can answer lots of questions that people have.
And I think I haven't read that one. I'd be really interested to look at it, because even myself, I'm 41 and I have nieces, nephews and family, you know, members that might be questioning sexuality and various things. And I think I'm up to date with the acronyms and terminology. And then when I speak to some of my family, I am not up to date, Ian. I am like, oh, maybe I don't know as much as I think.
And it is that it's a growing area of awareness. These terms and these concepts have been around forever. You know, gender is a prime example. You know, there are some countries in the world where there are legal third genders. There are some parts of society which have five genders. Mm. We are just becoming more aware as a society about them. You know, the term non-binary, for example, where someone doesn't identify with a gender. It's actually been around for a very, very long time in the concept of it in society, but it's only now that we're really talking about it. And it's about educating. I'm learning all the time, and it's my job to learn about these things, but it's constantly evolving. And it's important that, one, we realise that it's okay not to know. Don't worry if you don't know.
Yeah.
But it's just that understanding that, you know, if we come across these things, it's good to learn about them.
It really is. And I think as parents, carers, it is our job, isn't it, to make sure that we understand the terms and, you know, can do our best and admit if we don't know as well, like I do all the time with my family. I'm like, I don't even know what that means. Let's look it up together. Let's kind of explore together. But Ian, tell us a little bit about your experience around this topic.
So I grew up in the 80s and 90s when there was something called Section 28, which made it illegal for schools to talk about homosexuality. I knew that I was always different. There was something. And if you're around our age, because I'm about the same age as you, those who remember Funhouse with Pat Sharp.
Yep.
Everyone was talking about the twins, and I didn't get it, because all I wanted to talk about was Pat Sharp and his long
beautiful
hair.
Beautiful mullet, yeah.
Exactly. Looking back now, I've got no idea what I saw in that mullet. But I didn't understand my feelings. But I was 8 or 9 years old, and I knew that there was something different about me, because the conversations other people were having, I couldn't relate to them. And it was only when I was about 13 that I found out the word gay. And it was essentially because I was being bullied in school. I hadn't accepted my sexuality at all, but yet other people were bullying me. And a couple of things happened. I complained to the school about it. And the deputy head of my secondary school actually said to me, "Well, just fit in like everyone else and the bullying will stop." You know, and I think that was, 30 years ago. We've come on a huge way since then, where that would never happen. I would hope that would never happen in school, but that in fact caused a huge amount of damage to me because I had to hide my identity for a very long time. And it was only, I only actually came out when I was 21. But also my family didn't want anyone to know. You know, I was told by my parents, "We still love you, but please don't tell anyone else. We don't want our friends to know." And again, it was only in when I was about 21, 22 that I actually was sharing with people my identity. And I still suffer with mental health problems because of it. You know, I suffer from quite high anxiety. I have to do a lot of things to regulate myself because I hid myself for so long. And I think I really did not have a good experience with this stuff growing up. And I just want to make sure that that doesn't happen to other people, really.
And I think it's so important that by sharing your experiences, our experiences, that it helps other people to, not have, that same impact. Because we talk about society kind of being maybe more accepting and hoping that some of those things don't happen. But homophobic bullying in schools, for example, incidences are still going to be high, but we'd hope that schools have the capacity, empathy, understanding to be able to deal with that in the right way. But it's still there, and it's a shame, isn't it, that we've made all that progress. I remember at university actually going on marches against Section 28 and really being part of that movement to try and redact that legislation. And I guess what's really amazing now is the new curriculum, the relationships curriculum in schools that's gone the other way to Section 28, when we're trying to talk about things to educate people or children as they go through school. So there's lots of change, but I guess for a parent carer listening, there might still be some hostility, bullying, and even I think hearing, there was a big campaign, wasn't there, by Stonewall, trying to get rid of the "it's so gay" phrase and using "gay" as a term to say that things are rubbish. And you still hear it.
You do. Yeah, it is. And my job, I recently left teaching and I'm now a consultant going into schools to help exactly with this. I was only in a school 2 weeks ago where on the yard, oh God, that's so gay, is used as a very common slur. And I did a day of workshops with the classes, and it was really interesting when I sort of pointed it out. They hadn't clocked how harmful it was to them. It was just a derogatory word. They hadn't connected it with a real person. And that's things people say, "Oh, it's just a casual throwaway." It's really harmful. You know, it's even if they're what was interesting about the school I went in is where it wasn't directed at the children who were identifying as gay, it was others. But what I was explaining to them was, "Yeah, but you don't know who's overhearing that. Someone who might be struggling with their sexuality is overhearing." And as I did when I was that age and a bit older, I then identified being gay with as a very negative thing. And that's the effect of this language, is that what you're saying is if you're using "that's so gay" as a negative term, you're saying being gay is bad.
And I think linking us back to parents and carers listening is that I think as parents and carers, we can use language by mistake that may not be as inclusive as we intend, and we might be creating a picture around the LGBTQ plus community kind of by accident. We've talked a few times about gender stereotypes and things, for example, on the podcast, as an example of how that could happen at home. But I'm thinking out loud, Ian, as I always do. I'm thinking, and I'm conscious that we're using LGBTQ plus in the assumption that everyone knows exactly what those letters mean. I think it'd be a really good starting point to maybe explain, what those letters mean, maybe where they've come from as well.
And I think it's what's it really important here before I start is that these are my definitions because they have no universal agreed meaning because we're not all the same. Each person isn't the same. Each lesbian isn't the same. Each gay person isn't the same. So actually, you may see different definitions. So L is probably the easiest one in many ways. It's a lesbian where you have two women who are attracted to each other. I would also class trans women in that as well, who can be, and most lesbians I know are inclusive of trans women. So then you have B, which is bisexual, huge stereotypes of people who are bisexual, very often saying, well, oh, it's just, you know, a phase on the way to being gay. But actually being bisexual is a very bad sexuality that's been around for a very, very long time. Then you have G, which is gay, which is generally a man who's attracted to a man, but can also, some lesbians use the term, some bisexual people use the term as well. So gay can mean wider than just two men. And then you have T, which is transgender, which is someone, it's a big misconception about transgender, that it's someone who's changed their gender, and that is not true. It's also not someone who is trapped in the body or born in the wrong body. Transgender is where someone's sex at birth doesn't match the identity that they, the gender identity that they identify with. Sex is something that is biological and physical, but gender is something that society has made. It's, you know, it's something that we have invented, you know, hairstyles. Why do women have to have long hair? That's a gender, something that we have developed. So that's what transgender is. It's where the gender at birth, the sex at birth doesn't match with the gender they identify with. And then you have Q, which is queer. Now, I don't like the word queer. For me, it's very triggering because I was bullied by it. However, some people are happy to be describe themselves as queer. They're just not, they don't feel like gay or lesbian quite matches how they feel. Now, I have no problem with other people using the word queer, but I would never use it because you have no idea whether those people find it triggering or not. And then you have I, which is intersex, which is someone whose characteristics don't match the normal male and female. That could be that their hormones are not what's expected. It could be that their genitals aren't. Very often you might actually be intersex and you don't know, because if you've got an extra chromosome, you will never, ever know. So lots of us could be intersex. And then A is asexual, which basically means that someone who does not have sexual feelings. It's not celibate, because they people who are celibate choose not to. A means someone does not have sexual feelings. That's a very quick crash course. In
I know. Yeah, no, you've done really well, because it is, and it is really confusing. I'm, as I say, I think I know a fair bit, I think I know, but even then I was like, oh, okay, that isn't quite matching exactly what I thought. But I think the plus as well might be confusing for parents and carers. So why is the plus used, Ian?
So it's because this area is not black and white. You know, gender and sexuality is not black and white. We have been almost brainwashed in modern society to think that you're either one thing or other, you have to fit into a box. But actually, that isn't reality. And some people's sexualities might change throughout their life. And so that plus is to represent people who don't feel like they fit in those boxes, but also other terms that we maybe don't have yet or are newly evolving.
Yeah, and I think it's really, I think it's great to have the plus on, because it allows for individuals, doesn't it, rather than just everything matching neatly to a letter. So I think that plus is really important. So I guess I'm thinking about a parent carer that might have had their own child at home that's questioning their sexuality. What kind of tips or what would you suggest a parent carer to do if a child comes home questioning things about, you know, who they're attracted to?
I mean, the first thing is listen to them. You know, just let them listen. They're generally, if they are telling these things, they're not generally asking for help. They're just probably processing it. And it's just not trying to change them. They need to go through this themselves. You can be there for them. And sometimes we have to sort of suspend our own prejudices and past experiences. You know, I've got a 9-year-old, and I'm a gay, openly gay man, and I'm wondering what sexuality he's going to be when he's older. You know, I think we have to just let them go through this journey themselves, be there. And if they, you know, if they are using terms you don't know, ask them, but also do your own research as well. Find out about it. And just remember, no matter what sexuality or gender they are, they're still your child. And, you know, that is just a small part of their identity. They're still those wonderful people that they were before, regardless of who they're attracted to or what gender they identify with.
And it is just a small part of someone. It's just who that person happens to be attracted to, isn't it? And it, in simple terms, you know, that's where it comes from. But I'm thinking as well that perhaps if a parent carer is questioning their child's sexuality without their child actually saying something, maybe there's been some like clues around that, you know, that they're maybe looking at things on the internet that might be around sexuality, gender. What would you suggest around that?
I mean, the main thing I would always suggest is please don't confront them. I was confronted by my parents and I was not ready to talk about it. And it was actually quite traumatic for me. And my parents actually acknowledge now that they shouldn't have done it. Your child will talk about it when they want to talk about it, not the day before. And at the end of the day, this is not your story. It's not your information. It's theirs. So you just have to be there for them, you know. Please don't do interventions. It can cause absolute damage to your relationship. And as I said previously, it's such a small part of their identity anyway. You know, it's letting them just, all they need to know is that they are loved and you will love them no matter what. And when they're ready, they will talk to you about it.
And that space is key, isn't it? To be able to process it yourself, to be able then to share with someone else and get that support if it's needed. I think it's such, it's such a difficult area, isn't it? Because it is a small part of someone. But I mean, I remember growing up and, you know, having feelings that I might be attracted to the same sex, but it's so hard to talk to people about it, particularly in the late 80s, growing up in a small village in, you know, in Cornwall. But I think now the openness around friendship groups and talking about things, perhaps within friendship groups, it might be a bit easier to open up as well, to have that support. Is that something that you think?
Yeah, I think definitely now. I think children are far more accepting. That's not to say that there isn't still prejudice. And as we've already mentioned about people talking about gay, it's so gay and things like that, there is still prejudice out there. But definitely, I think that's probably the first place they're going to, they are going to look online for this stuff. And that's why sort of the relationship and sexuality education curricula is so important, because actually a big part of what we do in schools is to challenge the incorrect information that they're seeing, because there is so much information that is wrong. There's so much wrong information for parents out there on relationship and sexuality education. There are so many misconceptions. And what I would say to anyone who's wondering about that stuff is go and talk to your school. Please don't read what's on Twitter and Facebook by these campaign groups, because almost everything they're saying is lies and they can't back it up with anything. They back it up with more lies. So talk to the school and actually look at the government websites, because the government websites are where the actual information is. But we, you know, we are working hard in schools to make sure that children understand this stuff, because surely it's better for us to tell them it in a way that is well researched without them having to go on TikTok and finding information that is wrong.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, definitely. TikTok is not the the answer to questions that we want, really, is it? On TikTok, Ian, I cannot believe how quickly the time has gone. We've already gone past the time. If you just don't mind summarizing, just with three last top tips for parents, carers listening.
Yeah, of course. I mean, the first thing is just listen to them, and listening can be with not only what they're saying, but the way they're reacting to things, the way that they're behaving. Just observe them and just be there ready for when they want to talk to you. The second tip is, when they do tell you this stuff, never, ever suggest it's a phase. It is an incredibly derogatory thing to tell someone it's a phase. A young person knows their own mind better than anyone else. And finally, learn together. Do your research, find the information out, and make this a process where you can actually bond together.
Brilliant, Ian. Such amazing tips. And I think there's loads for parents, carers to think about. And I think particularly, I think myth busting and giving us really clear definitions is definitely going to help parents, carers listening. So thank you so much for your time today, Ian.
Yeah, no problem. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
You've been listening to the My Family Coach podcast. Thank you for joining us as we lift the lid on the challenging world of child behaviour. Remember to subscribe to listen to all our episodes, and there's heaps more helpful support for all your parenting needs on the My Family Coach website. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.